time for Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames hockey talk.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered, hosted by Brad Brood and Kyle Lewis. We're here on a hot summer afternoon talking Calgary Flames hockey. Kyle, how are you today?
Warm. How are you?
I am warm too, but...
Well, it's cool. It's cool inside, but...
It is, but yeah, I'm sick of the weather. I want some normal temperatures. I love fall. Fall is the time of year, you know, you can wear shorts and a sweatshirt. Hockey's getting going. Just, I don't know. It just a lot more enjoyable in my book.
Yeah, 100%. But it's just so damn short, right?
It is. Let's hope we spread it out into November this year. And I would love to see us get to December without any troubled weather.
Hey, good luck.
It was a year ago right now. I was standing at a concert. A Night Ranger concert, actually, and my phone went crazy with the Jonathan Huberto, Mackenzie Weegar, for Tkachuk deal. It does not seem like it can be a year already. It didn't go like we planned, but I am not giving up on that trade at all, are you?
No, I mean, the bigger piece to me, honestly, is I mean, I know Huberto is going to be good for 70-plus points, I'm convinced. But Weegar was so good in the second half. I still think he's like,
he's going to be the probably. Well, I can't say the most critical part of that, but possibly. I mean, to get a top four defenseman along with Huberto for Tkachuk to me was mind blowing. Still to this day.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it was still like people can shit on all they want, talk about the Panthers getting as far as they did, and how many points Tkachuk had, like. You can't make a better trade than the one the Flames made just because Huberto had a poor season and Weegar had a slow start. I mean, what more could you have possibly got?
And the reason I wanted to talk about this today quickly is that trade was so massive. And when we look back at that right now, since it's only been a year, and even last year, I think people forgot how big that thing was. I mean, we're going to look back at that trade a decade from now and think, wow, look at how big that trade was. You know, it's sad. It's the only other trade that I really remember that I thought was that earth-shattering, and it really wasn't, kind of. But I remember shoveling my driveway when my phone buzzed and Dion Phaneuf had been moved to Toronto. That was another one that just stood out for me. It stood out for me.
The one that stood out for me was Olli Jokinen.
Yeah?
Because at the time, the belief was... with reason back then was that he was going to solve all that first line center talk for years. And the first game that he played with them, I think they beat Philly 7-1 and he had like two goals and an assist. And it was like, holy shit, this is everything we hoped it would be. And I mean, he was still a good player for the Flames, but it wasn't quite what we hoped, but yeah. And obviously the Phaneuf one's up there too.
I don't know why I think it's, you know, like certain things catch you at certain moments. And
absolutely, yeah, for sure.
I don't know. I just remember exactly what I was doing when that trade dropped, and I just know we're gonna look back on this Huberto one. And
actually, it's funny. I now that you say that, I remember where I was with both the trades we just mentioned. So the Phaneuf one, I was at my then girlfriend's place, not far from where I live now, and I was in university at my buddy's place, about an hour from here, when the Jokinen trade happened. So. It's funny how you don't even realize you remember them, but then you think about it, you're like, oh yeah, I was so excited for that. Wow.
I was excited for the Jokinen one too.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I guarantee you the Huberto one will go better than the Jokinen one.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, the Jokinen one wasn't as bad as people make it out to be. He was still a really good player for the Flames. Part of the problem with him is that he got pigeonholed into being like, they're trying to make him more defensively responsible with like Brent Sutter, and they did, but it's like, you know, it's kind of like the hockey that Greg Gilbert wanted Mark Savard to play. And I want to touch on that now, actually, just since I've said that. It's so cool to see Mark Savard's Twitter account with the Flames background, the Flames avatar. For a guy that left town in such shitty circumstances like over 20 years ago, it really feels full circle. It's like a light version of Patrick Waugh going to a Canadian ceremony. It's like, that's cool. Like, because it's, if you remember it at all, and a lot of young Flames fans may not, it was so shitty the way that situation went down. It's great to have him back.
It was crazy to me. And like, and I'm in such an old school guy where like I, and we'll talk about this a little bit more when we get into Kiprusoff too and why he left. But, you know, I'm always under the thing where it's like, well, you don't let a player push a coach out.
Yeah.
But yet we lost Savard because of Gilbert.
Yeah.
I mean, Gilbert, like really, like of all guys we're going to die in a hill for, I just, that blows my mind. And I'm really happy to see Savard back. And I hope that goes well.
Well, and again, like I agree to a point with what you're saying about not letting a coach push out a player. Although when you have those, like Don Hay and all those Taskmaster type coaches, is a bit more understandable. But the fact that they lost the player and then fired the coach
two months later, right?
It boggles to this day. It boggles my mind. Like, so you just scorched earth policy, everything. If you're going to pick a side, at least stand by your decision, right?
Yes. Yes. Die on that hill. And they, yeah, you know, I,
yeah, 100%. Anyway, it's, long story short, it is fantastic to have Mark Savard back with the Flames, and we should have a very potent power play as a result of that. So much like the Blues did when he was assistant coach there.
Yeah. I liked our penalty kill last year, so that should hopefully stay the same. And if we get a power play going.
Also of note, and I'm just going to press, you know, touch on this very briefly. Jonathan Huberdeau coming to Calgary, I think, in signing that deal, does a lot to me, anyway, in terms of attracting French-Canadian talent to the Flames. So you've got Jacob Pelletier, you get in the minors, you get Jeremy Poirier, and I've now drafted from my local Moncton Wildcats, Morin, defenseman. Like, I think that it's the same as when you have, like I said about Zadorov probably being happy to have Sharon Govich on board, a fellow Russian, fellow countryman. The French-Canadian thing is very similar. So I think Huberto committing to the Flames on a long-term deal, those French kids with their broken English, you know, who maybe played in junior in Quebec and don't, you know, aren't as familiar with Western Canada. I think that's a really, really positive thing that really doesn't get talked about enough. I mean, look at the father-son relationship Huberdeau and Pelletier already have.
That was cool. One of the bright spots of last year was watching that develop.
One of the only happy things we heard from the Flames locker room all year.
It was, yeah, gosh. I am so glad we can actually like crumple that up now and throw it in the trash.
And every team does it. Every team does it. It's, you know, there's been so much said about it. We're not going to get into it too much because we've done that enough, as you've said yourself many times. But it's like, it happens. You move on. It's like any crappy relationship. It's like, you know, onto bigger and better things.
And it happens way more frequently than people. I mean, everybody right now, you turn on any webpage, it's like, what is going on with the Calgary Flames? Like, wait a minute. Like, 2 years ago, they were saying the exact same thing in LA. What's going on with the Kings? Seriously, like I could think of 100 examples, but
absolutely you could. Anybody could. So part of the game.
Boston loses a key cog to the last two decades as Patrice Bergeron announces his retirement after 19 seasons. I was thinking about this, and I have to ask you a question. When he entered the league, it was 19 years ago, so we got to rewind a bit. Why do I not remember it being a big deal, or was I just oblivious to it? Like, did he mature in his career to be what it is? I mean, was it a slow path to the stardom for him, or was I just oblivious to it 19 years ago, how good he is?
I think it was a bit of a slow path. I mean, he was, how would I say that? He was definitely underrated, wasn't, you know, considered like a lock to be an NHL player, let alone an NHL star, until, you know, he was quite far down that path. So
was it
flew under the radar.
Was it similar to Lindholm in the fact that Lindholm took quite a few years for people to put that number one center tag on him and feel good about it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and he was always good defensively. I think his offense really kind of came on a little bit later in his career. But, like, to me, I remember him mostly from the World Junior team when he was with Crosby and Phaneuf. And was that the lockout year, maybe? I think it was 2005, yeah. Anyway.
No, that was in Grand Forks, North Dakota. I was there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So like that, that to me, like for me anyway, that was his kind of coming out party. But like the guy is,
he was a big factor on that team, wasn't he? But but almost untalked about, because look at all the people that were talked about on the team. I mean, when I think back to that, oh, that was a great time. I spent the whole time in Grand Forks, and it was awesome. And you know what was funny? One story.
That's too wow. Like he didn't really score a crazy amount, but sorry, go on.
Ray Bourque's kid was playing for Team USA in that World Juniors.
Ryan?
Chris.
It would have been Chris, I think. Yeah.
And he sat two seats away from me, him and his wife. And so that was really cool. And then there was a during the middle of the tournament, like still in the initial play-in, or not the play-in games, but the round robin games, there was a bad snowstorm, and transportation was like almost ungettable to the arena. And I was staying like right there. So, I remember going over and watching, like, it was like Germany versus Kazakhstan or so. I can't even remember. Like it was like two no name teams out there, and everybody sitting around me in the section were all like Wayne Gretzky, Daryl Sutter, NHL scouts, like every head coach was there, every GM was there, because there was no NHL hockey.
Yep.
Like everybody sitting around me was like the who's who of the hockey world. And there was probably like, because of the weather, like, and who was playing, there was probably 1,000 fans in there. And it was just like everywhere you turned, it's like, oh, there's another star. There's another star, you know? Yep. God, that was some good memories.
His last name is actually Bergeron Cleary.
Really?
I just noticed that it's hyphenated, but they shortened his last name to Bergeron just for simplicity's sake. And if I just glanced through his stats here briefly, like I think his career high in points is only 79. Yeah. But this guy's a lock for the Hall of Fame.
Oh, just know? but see, that's the thing. Like, it just shows. Like, okay, look at how like the Norris Trophy is so skewed, and we've talked about that before. But like, look at how we all view Bergeron as the importance of what he was to Boston. Because of the way he was able to play defensively, and man, I, and who knows what will happen with the Lindholm situation, but I mean, is he on that path? I don't know. That's a question that we'll see over the next decade, right?
Yeah. Fun fact as well, since you mentioned him, Ray Bourque, who was the best defenseman I ever watched play. Bourque's father actually is from Moncton, where I live.
Really?
And when his father passed away, a good friend of my family's, a lawyer by the name of Wendell Maxwell, handled the estate. So in return for handling the estate, of course, as part of his compensation, Ray gave him a signed jersey and a bunch of Bruins tickets. So it was pretty cool. He's a hell of a nice guy.
He was. He was a great guy to visit with, and let's talk Mika Kiprusoff. As the retirement of his jersey was announced, that'll be March 2nd, 2024, against the Pittsburgh Penguins, the second goalie in Flames history to go to the rafters, as he joins Mike Vernon's number 30, and then also Jerome McGinley's 12 and Lanny McDonald's number 9.
Yeah,
Mika Kiprusoff was my man. Do I dare say this? No, I can't say he's my favorite all-time Flame. He is my second favorite all-time Flame.
That's pretty high praise.
He's my second favorite.
I'd seen him play live quite a bit. Obviously watched his whole career. I remember when he was acquired from San Jose. Like, this has been a long time coming.
I bet you don't remember what you were doing when that trade was announced.
No, I don't think anybody does. You know?
No,
I don't think anybody does, right? Like, man, what can you say? I mean, he carried so many crappy teams so much further than they should have gone. How many highlight reel saves? I mean, you know, we all remember stuff like the Scorpion and, it's a couple 2-on-1s. Like, you just can't say enough about him. Like, he's just so damn good. I find it funny that it's another March 2nd Saturday night jersey retirement, same as the Gidlas was.
Was it really?
It was March 2nd because it's framed in my office at home. Huh. Or in, at my
only you would know that, Kyle.
Well, there's a T-shirt on my wall that's framed. Two T-shirts in March 2nd, 2019, right?
Hell, see.
It's kind of funny, but...
I guarantee you they did not know that in the Calgary offices. I guarantee you they didn't know that.
Probably not. Yeah, I mean, all due respect to Mike Vernon, a legendary goaltender, like Kiprusoff is the most talented goaltender to ever play for the Flames, and it's not even really that close.
Oh no, I agree. I think he is by far the best. And you know, you look at his stats, and I saw a tweet from Darren Haynes the other day. He said most NHL wins during the 10 years in which Mika Kiprusoff played for the Flames, he had more wins than Brodeur, Luongo, Lundqvist.
Yep.
He had 305. Yep. And he was playing on teams that were not. He played on some pretty ragged Flames teams.
He absolutely did it. And unfortunately, like a lot of their stars, like, you know, Jerome McGillan, to a lesser extent, Jay Bouwmeester, Robin Regier, hung on to him probably too long in terms of trying to acquire assets for him. But also, how do you let go of a guy that is everything to your team like Kiprusoff was? I mean, we could have a drinking game about Flames backups to Mika Kiprusoff. You know, Phil Sauvé, Brian Boucher, Curtis Joseph,
McLennan,
Jamie McLennan, Vesa Toskala, Roman Turek. Wow, I'm forgetting some names.
Because he took over for Roman Turek because Turek got hurt, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember hearing
unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, I'm like, as I've said, I mean, I expect we'll probably both be at that game. I mean,
yeah.
It's just great to see. I mean, it's smart of the Flames to do that. That's a good way to kind of usher in the next phase of this team is, you know, have a jersey jammer for a legend like that. I mean, there's been a lot of turnover, a lot of changes in the last, you know, year and a half, basically. And it's nice to have something that you can unequivocally be proud of and excited about with regards to this team.
I remember when he announced his retirement, I was frustrated.
Yeah, he vetoed a trade to the Leafs, if I remember.
He did. Right. He vetoed a trade to the Leafs. He was just done with Bob Hartley. I know there's more to that story too, but you know, he retired with, you know, a healthy body and everything, and I respect him for that. I just remember thinking to myself, this guy is still good. Like, I mean, he's still good. But, you know, maybe that's a Kipper way of going out, really, though, too. And
as understated, as low-key as possible.
He is. So. I, you know what? I remember, three, 4 years ago, there was a video of him at the Saddle Dome, and it instantly turned into, like, a standing ovation. And I remember that, and I was watching the game on TV, and I just remember thinking, oh, man, Kiprusoff's there. Why couldn't I have been there on a night when he was there, you know? And it's like, that's how big he was. Like, that is how big he was. When I don't know. He had a wonderful career. And I mean, if you, the biggest saves in Flames history, I'm sure he holds 9 of the 10. I mean, it's that big.
Yeah. The other one is Mike Ferdinand, probably Stan Smile. That would be,
yeah.
That's what comes to my mind.
I remember that one. That was big.
Well, actually, Freddie Brathwaite against the Red Wings, that goal line stick save, that's up there. But anyway, again, we can make this into a drinking game. But yeah, Kiprusoff holds the vast majority, and I don't know he'll ever be surpassed near as a goalie greats with the Flames. I mean, Dustin Wolf looks very promising, but we're a long ways off from knowing what he is. But man, Kiprusoff is so fun to watch, and it's so weird to have a goalie where like, oh man, that's a goal. And then as you watch him play more and more, you're like, that's probably not going to be a goal because he was just that damn good.
Oh, yeah. No, that'll be a special night. And I know the Flames will do it right. And I am as excited to watch that jersey go up as I am to see the other Flames from that era who are in attendance and what they have to say.
Oh, yeah. Robin Regier will be there. Obviously, Conroy and Ginla, where they work for the team. Who else could we expect to see there? Like
Rhett Warner.
Probably Mike Commodore because he's always at the Saddle Dome anyway.
Commodore will be there for 100% sure. Yeah. Do we see Dion Phaneuf? I would say no.
Maybe Damon Lankow, I would think, would be there. Yeah. Maybe some more obscure names. Maybe Jordan Leopold. He played with him twice.
Would we see Shane Donovan there? He's went off the face of the earth too.
I don't know where he is now.
I never hear anything about him.
Curtis Glencross.
Christian Huselius. What the old Christian Huselius? Do you know that he was burned really, really, really bad?
He was, yeah. I remember hearing that. He actually, just quickly on Huselius, he was one of the most skilled wingers the team ever had, in my mind. He was so sublimely skilled.
I have a jersey hanging in my closet right behind me of his. I loved him. I thought he was great.
I remember when they actually, I do remember in early December of 05 when the Flames acquired him for Steve Monitor, rest in peace. I remember being excited with that because I knew he was really skilled and I thought, man, how the hell did they pull that off? And he was a fantastic fit.
Remember Chuck Kobusu?
I have one of his game-worn jerseys in my closet. Actually, the Chuck Kobusu jersey I have, it's photo-matched to him fighting for the puck with the recently discussed Patrice Bergeron.
Really?
Yeah, I'll send you a picture of it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I like some of those old guys like that, though. Just, you know, I mean, we're integral parts.
Yeah, Kobusu was a decent scoring winger. He scored 20 goals for the Flames. He went on to Boston. Yeah, he went on to Boston, Colorado, Minnesota. I think that was it, but he was actually he was a first round draft pick that turned out pretty decent, all told.
I wonder what ever happened to Spreek and
I lost track of him when he got traded to Arizona for him and Gauthier for Damon Lenko.
That's right. I thought he was a good player too. I mean, he was a younger guy that played a pretty integral part in that run.
Oh yeah, he was a great player. He was he had that game 5 goal against Tampa, right?
Yeah. Do you remember the overtime celebration? I don't remember who scored in overtime. I'm sure it was Jelena, just because he did every time. But do you remember the celebration where he must have been getting his skate repaired in the bench?
Yeah.
And he's out there on one skate, and all I was thinking is, fuck, don't step on his foot.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That was crazy. We got side railed there big time.
You know, we're gonna do a Where Are They Now episode.
That's a good idea. I better write that down. We're going to have to. Yeah, that's a good off-season one.
We're each going to pick maybe 10 names. We're going to confer with each other, make sure there's no duplication, and we're going to reveal on the show what they're up to.
Perfect.
That's cool.
A couple other things before we get to the nuts and bolts of the show is let's touch on some Wranglers news. As they hire Trent Cull as head coach. He was with Vancouver as an assistant and in Abbotsford as a head coach for the prior 5 seasons.
Yep.
Kirk Muller, former Flames assistant coach, goes on to the Washington Capitals to be an assistant coach with Mitch Love, actually, there. Other Wranglers news, Brett Sutter is returning for another season as captain with the Wranglers. 36 years old, 1,000 pro games. Oof.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I think it's actually 1,000 AHL games.
It is. It's 1,000 AHL.
There's only 8 players that have done that. And you know, for how little we talk about the AHL, it's still pro hockey. That is very impressive.
That's a long career. I don't care what you're playing. I mean, that's a long sports career. And you were talking.
It's funny. I was thinking there just real quick when I saw him. Like, you know, he's 36 years old. I'm like, man, he's getting old. I'm like, well, fuck, I'm 36 this year. Whoops.
But could you imagine your body being put through that every night?
No. I can barely get to work in the morning as it is.
You were talking prior to the show about the longevity of a Sutter in the organization. How many years was it that you had figured out? 26?
26 years, yeah. 97, 98 when Brian Sutter was hired as head coach.
Crazy.
Yeah.
First-round draft pick Sam Hanzik signs today. I believe it was a 3-year deal, $950,000 with player bonuses. Formality, but also still nice to see a sign.
Hey, some guys won't sign the real C. I mean, it's rare, but it's generally a formalities. But, you know, another piece of summer business taken care of.
And just one more thing. And, you know, we're waiting for the shoe to drop still. And we'll see if it does and see if there's any more moves. I'm starting to lose hope that the cap will allow a whole lot of moves, but.
Well, we talked about this before we came on. The Bergeron retirement definitely changes things in terms of the center market. So with Lindholm, there's a lot of talk, the Bruins don't have the assets it would take to acquire Lindholm. Maybe, maybe not. But it's still a domino effect. If the Bruins acquire anyone to fill that hole, you know, so something's got to give, and I'm 50-50 if Lindholm's a Flame in training camp.
I'd say that's about a good.
One thing I want to say, because I've been critical of this too, and this just came to me. Remember when everybody was roasting Joe Sakic with the Avalanche for hanging on to Matt Duchene for so long?
Yeah, he got what he wanted, right?
He traded him for fucking everything you could possibly get. It was such a shrewd move. And that's one of the few times where I looked right at the trade and talked to a buddy of mine. I'm like, I was absolutely dead wrong about this 1,000% from the get go. Like, you know, you go back and forth, but I was wrong about that start to finish. Maybe this is similar. Maybe Conroy, Hengist, and Lindholm are all like, oh, you got to trade him. This is ridiculous. And then he gets a ransom for him. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know. Do you feel like a GM, like it takes time for a GM to mature into those types of moves? Or do you think that's something that Conroy can do right away?
That's a tough question. That's a great question, actually, at the same time. It's a shitty hand to be dealt as a new GM to be in that situation. But I think that's what he spent, you know, the last, whatever it's been, 10 years in the organization, maybe 12 years now, applying his trade, learning. I mean, this is what he's worked his whole life to be in this management position. So I think he can pull it off and do decent. It just, obviously, the timing's not right. Or he thinks he can re-sign him for a decent amount of money. But if the numbers are thrown out or anyway accurate, it's not a decent amount of money. So we'll see.
Well, let's do this. I was thinking this week. I'm like, all right, what would I do if I was in charge of the Flames with some of the stuff that have happened this summer? And I thought, you know what? What's better than putting Kyle on the spot and me asking him questions on what he would do if he was in charge of the Calgary Flames, whether that be in an ownership, coaching, whatever capacity, because you're going to need to know it all to answer these 10 questions, Kyle. So,
10, oof.
You know what I was thinking also, too? It's about a year ago right now. A year ago in September, we announced you joining the show. That's crazy. That's already coming up on its anniversary. So
that's wild, yeah.
We'll put you to the test here. So, the first thing I want to know is, if you were in charge of the Flames, would you drop the Forever Flames program and retire the numbers of McInnes and Neuendijk?
Absolutely. No question. No question. For a few reasons. Both guys are fantastic Flames. Hall of Famers. apart from that, I hate the Forever Flame program. I think it's a cop-out.
I do.
I think it's a total cop-out. It's wishy-washy. It's foolish. It doesn't really serve a purpose. But let me throw that one back to you. I know how you feel about Forever Flame. Would you retire those two numbers?
Absolutely. Both those two. I think it's a travesty that Al McInnes isn't up there. And I've always thought, I mean, look at how impactful Joe Neuendijk was for the Flames. And look at how, even in his trade, how impactful he was for the Flames.
Oh, unbelievable.
And he had nothing to do with that. But I'm just saying, like, Joe Neuendijk's number should be hanging from the rafters.
Did you see on Nick Moore, who's a really well-known, fantastic guy, but a very prominent Flames jersey, game-worn jersey collector. Nick acquired a Joe Neuendijk game-worn jersey, the 94-95, I think it was the home jersey. And Nick actually had packaged one of the jerseys I sold him in a deal to finance, because this is a very expensive jersey and a very rare jersey. Anyway, if you haven't seen any of the Facebook groups, check it out.
I'll have to check that out. I always
it's a beautiful, beautiful sweater. And I just messaged Nick today. I was like, hey man, like nice job grabbing that jersey. Like, cause he was Neuendijk's. Well, you can make the case of Neuendijk's the best center the team's ever had.
Yeah. Oh, I think you'd make a strong argument for that.
Yeah. Well, that's why he's in the Forever a Flame program. So
that's right. Yeah. A phase two to that question. Is there any other Flames that you would retire?
Oh, I hate this question, Brad.
That's why I do it to you, man. That's why I'm...
Okay.
I think it's fairly easy. I think it's fairly easy.
It is if you're only talking hockey. The problem is, in any professional capacity, anything to do with fame, you can't just, people have a hard time just talking about somebody's performance in terms of the sport they played, the music they released, whatever. But 14.
Absolutely. There's no question. Look at his numbers.
Yeah. But
he was a good Calgary Flame fan. He was a great player for the Flames. He was a great. Look at the fanfare he got when he tried to come out of retirement.
Yeah. But since that time, and I'm only playing devil's advocate here, but like, since that time, he's trotted out, you know, so much stuff on social media and so many theories and so many things. So from a PR standpoint, he's not making it easy for the Flames to do it.
But he's but everybody has a right, okay, right to their opinion. Like, what if he was trotting out stuff on the other side? Would that be okay then?
No, I don't think so. Not to the extent that he does it.
Do you know what I'm saying, though? Like, I just...
Oh, I do. And do you understand where I'm coming from in terms of, just all I'm saying is, for the Flames, for a PR perspective, he's making it difficult on them. Because if he just had his beliefs and had his little website and whatever, that's fine. We all have those beliefs and feel certain ways. But yep. He's so vocal and such a polarizing figure mm-hmm. politically that it's just tricky. But if we're talking about Theo Fleury, the hockey player, and what he did for the Flames and how good of a player he was, it's absolutely no question. If you ask me personally, the more the years go by, the harder time I have not retiring a jersey that nobody has worn since he left.
Nobody will. The Flames won't give it out. They will not give it out.
But nobody's ever talked about it. They've skirted around it, I should say,
in terms
of the Flames themselves.
I just think it needs to be done because he was such an integral part of this team.
I think once it's done, the relief that people may feel knowing that Theo Fleury, the hockey player, mm-hmm. had his jersey retired, I think that would be... It's like, okay, it's done. This is great. He got what he deserved. The team honored him. And his comeback attempt was one of the most exciting, edgier seat things I've ever watched the Flames in, because I loved him as a kid. I wear 14 in pickup hockey because of him.
Like, he's my all-time favorite Calgary Flame. I remember in 1993, I had ordered a game. Like, you know, back then, you did game-worn jerseys were almost unheard of back then. But I had ordered a game weight jersey, like a real Theo Fleury jersey. And I was at the Westin Hotel in Winnipeg, when the team bus pulled up, and, he walked right over to me and signed my jersey, took pictures, just super good guy, visited with him for probably 20, 30 minutes. Super good guy. But that being said, I mean, everybody's life leads them in different places. And he's had struggles beyond what many of us can even.
I've read both of his books. They're both signed by him. I've met him a few times. He actually follows me on Instagram, which is just it was just the coolest thing to me at the time.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I see that he will. You know, like, we've met a couple times, and he's a genuinely very good person. But he's been through hell and back, and for anybody to sit there and, you know, really judge somebody who's been through as much as he has, it's difficult. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult, and I want to tread carefully because I know there's listeners who are going to feel, you know, that you cannot retire that number and all these different things, and they have every right to voice those opinions.
We all have opinions, and that's okay. Exactly. That's the world we live in.
Podcast, right? You and I don't always agree on everything.
No, heck no. It wouldn't be fun if we did.
We still got more questions we're going to fight over. Okay, but as far as that goes, we both feel the same way on that one. I think you just have to. You basically already have just a banner hanging there, right?
Absolutely. Okay, moving on. Rasmus Anderson is a top blank defenseman in the NHL.
Oh, that's a really good one. The easy answer is 4, easily. There's nobody's going to argue that. If they are, they're an idiot. I wouldn't say he's an elite number one, but I think he's a top two defenseman on any team.
Yeah. I don't know what team you
put him on where he doesn't play in the top pairing more often than not, let's say.
Yeah. And that has been a development to get to that, but I really feel that comfortable with him.
So just for fun, since we've gone there, and maybe this is a question you're going to ask me because we didn't talk about this before.
No, I didn't give you these.
We don't rehearse anything. So let me ask you, the next captain of the Calgary Flames should be blank.
Very difficult to answer right now based on the circumstances. If re-signed, I believe it's Michael Backlund, hands down.
Okay.
If it is not,
and if not re-signed.
If it's not re-signed, I would hand it to Rasmus Anderson.
Yep. Anderson, I think, would be my pick, too.
And I'm not shunning Tanev by saying that, but there's questions about where Tanev goes.
Yeah.
So there's so many questions, like, right now. Like, that's one of the things that I thought was interesting this summer. You know, we heard... Huska say that, you know, a captain, and Connery also did too, that a captain would be named. And I thought, well, that's all fine and dandy, but like, you're going to name a captain not knowing if, like, are you going to name a guy a captain not knowing if he's going to re-sign with you? I mean, like, there's so many questions. It's going to be really a trick. It's going to be a tightrope act to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Are you going to propose to your girlfriend and think she's going to leave you? No.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
you gotta tread carefully with that stuff, man. You really do.
It is. Next question. Elias Lindholm. Do you sign him 9.5 for 8 years or lose him for nothing?
Oh, I would lose him for nothing.
Okay.
I'm not giving him that money in term. It makes no sense.
I agree. And then you lose him for nothing.
Sure, this team.
You lose him for nothing, and you look at it as a cap win. Look at how. Yeah, I hate to, because I don't want to lose him for anything. So I hope nobody listening today thinks that I want to lose him for nothing, because I don't. But if you nobody look thinks. At what people are trading away for cap space.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Cap space is. It's like the new first round pick.
It is.
It's a huge commodity. And anytime you can send somebody you don't want, retain a little bit of salary and fire them out of town, because the reality is the economics of the game are not going to change from what they have since the lockout in 2004-05. Like, GMs are going to keep being idiots and keep having bidding wars over stuff.
I know.
This is never going to. Now, I think on the Burn Burner podcast, they mentioned about doing another compliance buyout. And I don't have an issue with that. I mean, maybe every 5 years you get one compliance buyout, because that's cash money that your owner have to admit, we made a mistake, we have to pay it out, make this mistake go away. Because the problem now, and I see you grimacing there, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Music, you won't notice there's a badge just coming. And I get it. But to me, the game is getting so bogged down with bad contracts. We're not, look, this month of July, what the hell has happened?
I know, but are we supposed to let general managers and franchises off the hook for shitty decisions?
Well, they're like, paying the money out.
I think
they're not off the hook, but the cap space they kind of are.
So, but is the real problem that teams are making bad decisions, or is the real problem that the cap didn't go up because of escrow and COVID? Both. So, both. I mean, I do agree with you. I believe it is both, but I do think that over the next few years, when we see that cap climb at a fairly high incremental as predicted, that'll remedy a lot of this.
I hope it does, because it's the off season right now, apart from the fun discussions we're having, the day-to-day of the off season is goddamn boring.
And I honestly, I think it's going to be from here on out, just because we're locked in cap wise. Like, what are you going to do? I mean, like, what are you going to do? I think it could get real interesting come trade deadline next year, as I think it's going to be bonkers. And I think off season is going to be, I think not deadline, but free agency next summer. We're going to have to take the whole day off of work, because we're probably going to have a freaking 5 hour long show that day.
Well, the good news for me is that's Canada Day up here, so I'll be off anyway.
Well, I'll take it off. I think we need to really, because I do think it's going to be that big of a day next year. So yeah. I don't know.
I could see it.
How many games does Dustin Wolf start next season?
Oh my God! How much thought did you put into these, man?
I would love to tell you they're going to get.
I wrote a whole HR policy for work today. I did most of it in 45 minutes. This seems like a week worth of. Hey, what's the hardest questions I could possibly ask my co-host? God damn! All right. There's so many variables involved. I'm gonna say 15 to 20.
Really?
Yep. I think he's proven so much. I think that there's going to be an injury or a situation like a team in Columbus who needs a goalie. Rivalera may get traded. Something is going to give in the goalie market.
And I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. I'm with you, because I hate to be this way, but we're probably due for an injury between one of the two guys.
I don't even estimate our guys, right? Even an injury somewhere else that necessitates a trade.
Yep. There you go. I mean, I don't know. Something's
maybe Markstrom has a year like last year and has to go to the psych ward for a few weeks.
I know. I've got a feeling, and I pray I'm right on this one, but I have a really good gut feeling on that one.
Nice. All right.
All right. Next question. What Flames UFA is your number one priority to move, and which is your number one priority to re-sign?
Priority to move is Hanifin. Because a few reasons. I think you have an almost perfect replacement in Oliver Shillington, who looks to be in great shape. A little rust from a year off, maybe, but.
And you know he's not re-signing, because he says he wants to go play in the U.S.
Yeah. Exactly. But Shillington has the speed, the skill, arguably more offensive ability than Hannafin. I think that'll show. So you have the perfect replacement in-house. I would strive to keep Backlund because his cap hit can only be so much. And also, the guy is, much like Bergeron, unless you're a big-time Bruins fan or really pay attention to all the conjecture around him, you don't realize how good he is as a two-way player. What do you do if Backlund's gone? Who's the trusty guy that's going to bring along a Jacob Pelche, a Walker Duehr, a Matthew Coronato? You can stick any rookie with him so they can tread or be above water. You can put him in a scoring line in a pinch. It's not ideal, but you can. He's still, you know, around 40, 50-point player. They don't grow on trees, right?
There is so many people in Calgary land that have taken Michael Backlund for granted. I'm not saying you overpay him.
You try your best to keep him, and I think you do that by saying, "Look, you know, we feel that if you're going to stick around, we want you to be our captain. Maybe they can mutually agree on a shorter term extension and look at trade possibilities to a contender if it's not working out.
How many years do you sign him? That's a bad question. What's the limit of years you would give him? If he said, you know what, I'll do it. I want to do it. But I want 5.2 for 5 years.
Yikes. I might do it at 5 by 4.5, maybe, but even then you're getting to some long tooth years where you're not going to get the return of your dollar. I'd love to say you could go 4, but you're probably going to have to go 5. For the right money, I could deal with it.
I think I could deal with it. Number one,
you have to have a modified no trade so that you can say, hey, even if it's this season at the deadline and somebody's willing to talk because they think they're going to win a cup and they don't mind the term on his deal, like, hey, you know, we didn't have the season we thought we would.
Yeah, but you can't do that, though, because, like, if you do that, you're signing Backlund as your captain. You're not going to sign him for 5 years and then trade him at the deadline. Your captain?
Well, if he wants out, you know, if it doesn't pan out, I don't know. You have to have some kind of real honest conversation to hope that you're somewhat on the same page.
And that's why this summer is just, I mean, look at how tricky it is just for me and you to get through it. And we don't have to make the final decisions.
No, all we have to do is talk about it.
That's right. Okay, next question. What prospect do you feel most comfortable having in the opening day lineup?
What do we qualify as a prospect?
I wrote down 5. Pelche, Duehr, Coronato, Zari, and Poirier.
The least comfortable is Poirier because he has to work on his defensive game, although he made some significant strides last year.
He did.
Most comfortable is, it's like a toss-up between Duehr and Pelche.
Because we saw him last year. So I agree. Yeah.
Well, but they proved they belong, especially Duehr. Pelche, he didn't get as much of a look as he should have because, you know, Sutter went off on him and scratched him way too much. But
how many of those do you think we see in their opening night?
Duehr and Pelche are locks. Sure. And I think Coronado's in your opening night lineup too.
I think so. Okay.
Yeah. He showed really well in that one game and he has the tools they need on the right side. I don't know. I think he's going to have a really strong camp and he's going to prove a lot of people that he belongs to the NHL. I really do.
I hope he comes in and has a strong camp so it makes it easy, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, the scoring's got to come from somewhere.
Yep.
I think Sharon Govich is going to have a great year, but, I mean, the right side, I mean, he's not even a natural right winger, but it's pretty thin.
Yeah. Jordan Osterley, is he in your top 6 next year?
He's my 7th, ideally. But it depends on what happens, right? I suspect there's going to be a Hannafin trade.
I'm really interested if there is a Hannafin trade, if there's a defenseman in return. I feel like there's not going to be.
I don't think, unless it's... Yeah, no, I can't see it.
I can't see it.
I don't know. Jordan Esterly is interesting to me, man. Like, he's got all the tools to be an everyday NHLer. You got to monitor those minutes is the impression I get from what little I've seen him play and reading scouting reports and stuff. But he's your ideal 7th. I'll put it that way. He's 7th in my
answer. No, Michael Stone's our ideal 7th. But
well, that's not an option anymore, Brad. We're talking about that.
He's gonna have to do in a pinch here. He's got some mighty big shoes to fill. Was last year's success over lack of success overblown, or was it just a bad luck year?
that's definitely overblown. It wasn't so much, it was terrible personnel management. So,
So that being said, because I agree with you, I agree completely that it was a lot of personnel. I do believe that we had a lot of players underachieve last year also. So I think it's a combination of the two.
Oh, and it's a huge change from even the players you had, right?
So was it just an off year? Is this really still a good hockey team?
Absolutely it is. There's no question in my mind it is.
Okay. And then that's what I feel too. I just hear so much talk in Calgary about, oh, blow it up. And I'm like, I don't think this team is bad. A few holes, you get some youth injected into this, you get some better goaltending, you get a better power play.
On paper, you're going to have all that. Yeah. Mark Savard, I guarantee you this power play is going to be top 10 in the league. I'm sure of it. Because he's so creative and he lets skilled players do what they need to do to score. But it's funny, I was looking at, I've got a book here of the Flames 03-04 run, and I was trying to photo match one of my jerseys from that time. And I kind of forgot, like, all the rookies that played on that team. Matthew Lombardi, Chuck Kobusu, Saprinkin had barely played any games, I think. Like,
he was in his second year, but I believe the first year was, like, minimal games.
Yeah, like, there was, and that's exactly what this team could be doing. Pelletier, Dewar, Coronado, maybe Connor Zary.
I don't know. I don't think we should write this winter off as going to be bad.
No, not at all. No. One of the more interesting teams to watch this year, for sure, because there are obviously some reasons that the team kind of face planted outside of just coaching and the stuff we've talked about. So, but I think I still think it's a good hockey team. I do.
Last question: if you were the GM, how would you dispel all the talk going around the league of everybody wanting out of Calgary?
Well, I think you point to the long term commitments by Uyghur and Huberdeau.
And Kadri. Everybody's forgotten that Kadri and Markstrom were back-to-back years the most highly sought-after UFAs. And Calgary got them both.
Well, and you just answered part of the question yourself. That's a huge thing to point to. I think that's really it. And also highlighting things like, you know, Gaudreau leaving, and Kachuk leaving. They had very specific reasons for why they wanted to leave, some of which were public, some of which, you know, not so much, obviously, like any situation, but it's not like this mass exodus of players. I remember when Tony Amani and Darren McCarty signed in Calgary, and I was like, wow, how did the Flames pull that off? The same summer that Pekan Pronger went up in Edmonton, right? Like, you know, there's players that want to be there, but there's players that, whether it's personal reasons, family, whatever, they're going to want to play elsewhere.
I just think that's key in every, that's there in every organization, though.
Yeah. So, well, the number one thing you can point to is the guy from Potsdam, New York, Craig Conroy, came here to trade from the Blues and never left, apart from that little stint in LA,
and
which really came down to the fact that, you know, he had an opportunity to make more money and he could trade it back to Calgary anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Daryl Sutter at the time went to Jerome McGinley and said, what is this team missing? And Jerome McGinley answered Craig Conroy. And obviously he never got them over the hump, but a born and raised American who played some minor pro hockey in Canada, was back in the States when he was with the Blues after he left the Habs, came to Calgary and never left. I mean, if I'm sitting at the podium and I'm talking about it, I'm going to say, well, look at me. Why would I still be here?
Was it Lankow that McGinley was not happy with coming? Because I heard
it was Conroy.
It was Conroy.
Conroy is the one where, again, let's say, like, we don't need any more grinders, right? Because that's before Conroy had any amount of offensive success in the NHL.
Okay.
I want to say it was Kent Wilson, but somebody not that long ago talked about how Lankow was, like, extremely underrated, did a very admirable job as a Flame. And when you go down the top 10 centers in Flames history, I think Lankow is in your 8, 9, or 10 spot.
Probably, yeah.
Yep.
Probably, yeah. He was a solid player for this team.
Man, those are some great questions. I didn't even know how many you asked me because they all just flew so. You know,
I asked you 10, and I don't know. I just was thinking about it. I'm like, I wonder what Kyle would do here. I wonder what the hell.
We got to create some content here, right? There's nothing happening in the day to day, so.
Yeah.
Or very little, I should say.
There's very little going. Because, like, at night now, when I sit down at the end of the night, I was usually taking a couple hours or an hour at the end of the night to watch TV, and that's when I will usually watch hockey.
Yeah.
There's no sports right now. I'm dying. I'm dying. I'm not a sitcom guy. I'm not a reality TV. I don't know. I'm a sports guy, and there's shit. There's nothing going on.
It's a dog days of the baseball season. It's vacation season for everybody, right?
It is brutal right now. It's just, ugh. But we will take a little break on Flames Unfiltered, but we're going to be back in August, and Kyle and I have got some plans for the next episode. We'll be back in early August. We're going to do it on a weekend. We are going to sit back and have a little barroom edition of Calgary Flames Hockey Talk as we'll pop open a few beers or just mix a few hard drinks and talk Flames hockey, and then it's gonna get off the rails at the end, and we're going to talk a little bit of music too, since Kyle and I are both big into that, and we'll have a little fun with that, and that should be a good time, and that is coming up in early August. We'll figure out a date in early August to do that. Of course, Flames fans, if news breaks, trades happen, things go on, Kyle and I'll be back with another quick show, even if it's a shortened edition of the show. We'll be here talking Flames hockey and hopefully staying cool.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, Flames fans, enjoy your offseason. Hockey's getting closer every day, and we're all looking forward to it here at Flames Unfiltered. Have a good summer, Flames fans.
Cannot wait. See you soon.
Connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. Check out the Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Host Brad Brood is on Twitter at Brad Brood, and host Kyle Lewis is on Twitter at VanLewis14. Like what you hear? Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Flames Unfiltered can be found on all the major podcast players. Want to watch the show? You got it. Check out Inside Edge Hockey Media Group for every show. Subscribe while you watch. Thanks for listening, watching, and interacting. Enjoy the hockey action.
The win comes! Playoff! Yeah, baby! Playoff! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.